Welcome back to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. So have you guys been on Netflix recently? The number one show streaming on Netflix is called Ashley Madison, Sex, Lies, and Scandal. It's so good. I sat down and watched all three parts in one evening. The docuseries tells the story of Ashley Madison, the infamous dating website for married people looking to cheat on their spouses. Specifically, it focuses on a data hack perpetrated on the website in 2015 that resulted in millions of users' personal information getting leaked online, exposing their extramarital affairs. The website's provocative slogan is "Life is short. Have an affair." And despite the challenges it faced following the hack by a mysterious online entity calling itself the Impact Team, who, by the way, were never caught despite a $500,000 reward from the police, Ashley Madison is still around today, just under new management, doing better than ever. They tell me that they are upwards of 365,000 new members a month, and they've hit over 60 million followers. I think that says something about our society as a whole, but that's a whole nother topic. Among the most frequent interviewed couples on the docuseries, you will come across Sam and Nia Rader, the stars of a popular family vlogging channel whose marriage nearly ended when Sam's data was breached in the Ashley Madison hack in 2015, exposing him as one of the site's many male users looking for sex outside of their marriage. After years of keeping secrets while maintaining the illusion of a perfect family life online, Sam goes into the docuseries and describes how he finally broke down and told his wife, Nia, that he'd been cheating on her for years. But by the end of the series, you're wondering if Sam and Nia are actually going to make it, be able to mend and preserve their marriage, and how they're going to do it. I have them on today. I'm very thankful that I have them on today because I do feel like they are a couple who has been reduced to a headline. They're getting a lot of hate online right now, even though they opened their lives to document what happened and whether or not they're still together. And I find that their story coming from their mouth is more than you're going to get from just watching the docuseries, which they will agree with me on. They have a book out too now that really talks about faith and how that helped them get through it. But I definitely think this is a very interesting docuseries to watch. It covers so much ground. The hack totally affected people's lives. There are people that killed themselves because they could not face their partner, could not go back to work. Obviously, tons of marriages were broken up. And then you have this couple that we are featuring today who were able to make it, and they tell us how and why, but they talk about how they got through that. So I really hope you enjoy this episode. I loved it. I think they're very interesting. If you liked it, please, after you're done, go write a review. Feel free to reach out to me, give me your thoughts. I love hearing from you guys, but I really think that you're going to enjoy my conversation with Sam and Nia. Sam and Nia, I'm so happy that you guys are here with me today. Thank you for joining me on Misunderstood.
You're welcome.
Yeah, we're glad to be here.
So, all right, let me start by saying this weekend when Ashley Madison, Sex, Lies, and Scandals came out, I thought I was going to sit down and like do my dishes in the background. I had to stop what I was doing and I watched every single episode back to back. And it was really because of you guys. I was rooting for you guys. I wanted to know what happened. You guys were filmed separately. Spoiler alert, you guys are together still. And I was like, I had so many questions. So I needed to basically track you down to get you on the show and have you answer those questions. The first thing I wanted to start with, though, is, you know, now that the documentary is out, how are you guys doing? Let's just start there.
I think we're doing pretty good, actually. You know,
it's been a very interesting ride. Last night we had a pretty heated radio interview, which we were not expecting. They came at us pretty hard, and that kind of came out of nowhere for us because it was a last minute decision. But before that, we've been doing pretty good because I'm living in truth again, exposing some lies I told our viewers, and that's feeling great for me. Nia's getting to bless other couples, other women who've been through the same thing. So can't complain, really.
Okay, good. So I did look at a lot of your posts recently and I saw a lot of the comments. And what's interesting is when you watch you guys on the documentary, I think that, I mean, I'll only speak for myself, but I think you guys come across really well in an empathetic light. I think people are very interested in knowing how it happened, what happened, and really want to know what happened to you guys after the fact. So I was puzzled by a lot of the comments that I've seen on your Instagram, because it's a lot of people coming from a place of judgment. So before we get into that, I kind of want to spool back a little. And for people that are listening that may not know the entire story or know your story, if you could briefly fill everybody in sort of on the background, how you guys met, what your faith was before you met, your beliefs in marriage, you know, just give me a little bit of background before we get into where a little bit of the drama started.
Sure. I can start off kind of our childhood, I think, is pretty important to our story because we both grew up in broken homes. My dad left me at left my mom and a family of eight, and just kind of up and left for another woman. And I watched this happen. So that was a pretty traumatic event for me. And Nia kind of went to something similar. But fast forward to when we met.
Yeah, we met when I was only 15, and we started dating when I was 16. And we fell in love super fast. I mean, it was like hard and fast, super codependent and a little bit of an unhealthy need for each other. But there was
a lot of love, a lot of passion.
And that carried, I mean, it's carried all the way through, even though there's been hard things.
Even until today.
Yeah. All the way through. And we got married after 5 years, and our dream day, like the best day ever, best day of our life. And, you know, we had our first child, you know, started getting bogged down with jobs and stuff like that. But, you know, as far as our faith goes, we were both Christians when we met each other. And that had remained a big part of our life as we dated. And then when we got married, things kind of like, it was still there. The faith was still there. But I think because we met so young, there's just kind of like this like need to like rebel maybe on his part. Not so much for me, but I mean, if I did, it was in, you know, different ways. I don't know.
I never purposely try to rebel. I mean, I loved the Lord all through high school. The moment we prayed together, we read the Bible together. Mm-hmm. We include some notes that we shared with each other in the book that we found that were just all about trying to please the Lord. But we just got caught up in sex with each other before marriage, and we hated it. We went back and forth, but we had a relationship with the Lord.
Yeah, we did. And it was still there, even though Sam was, you know, doing bad, you know, bad things. We still went to church together. And yeah, I don't know. So it's just been a part of our relationship from day one.
Okay. And then just briefly tell me what you guys were doing for a living before, obviously, you took a turn and started doing vlogging.
Yeah, sure. Basically, I went to nursing school, became a nurse a year into being married.
Yeah. Right. And I was working in retail, but had for a while been just a stay-at-home mom for, you know, a couple of years leading up to all of that. So.
And we also did wedding photography on the side, the two of us.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you guys were hard workers. You understood the value of dollar and also the value of faith in your life. So, you know, what I think people find, or are confused about in marriages is that when people cheat, it doesn't necessarily mean that there's not a lot of passion in a relationship or there's something missing. Can you talk on that subject about when, or, you know, just talk on the subject in general, because I believe, at least from reading your book and also from watching you guys on the docuseries, it seemed like you guys, although you had a lot of new things in your life, working, kids, that you guys were pretty close and passionate.
Yeah, we still were. Like our marriage was good for the most part. On the surface, it was pretty good, and maybe not at a real deep level. We started compromising with
Our values, I guess, just compromising our boundaries, really.
Yeah. We still loved each other, and I started keeping things to myself. We kind of got isolated in our marriage so that we weren't really talking with other people. That was really harmful for our new marriage, we see. And my life just kind of, even though I was doing these things, I went to ER nursing because I had this desire to be, I guess you'd call me adrenaline junkie, but it turned out not to be that at all in ER nursing. It turned out to be basically me helping other people with their drug habits, it seemed like, most of the time. But yeah, and then things kind of, where are we at? What are you talking about?
Sorry.
Well, I mean, I want to talk about cheating for a little bit, because obviously it comes out later that you joined a website, but it does come out even later than that, that you had been cheating before that. So before, I don't want to stay on this subject, but I do want to talk about, because I think that it's misunderstood a lot, where people think that you have to be in a bad marriage, or you're, you know, a sex addict, or, you know, people blame a lot of things. And I just, I genuinely want to know from your standpoint, what was it that you think you needed to go outside your marriage?
It's such a dumb thing, such a simple way to say it, but actually, like, one of the number one causes for infidelity is boredom. Like, people get into a monotonous life and they're doing the routine things day after day after day. Some people are good at that and they love that kind of schedule. Me is one of them, amazing at just being steady. But man, I need a life that kind of just goes up and down, and I have multiple adventures. And I was seeking, yeah, adventure. I wasn't a sex addict. I was, no, definitely not a sex addict. I think it might have appeared that way in the documentary. A lot of people accuse me of being a sex addict, but I went out searching for something and I never found it.
Got it. Okay, so let's talk about when Ashley Madison came into your life. Ashley Madison, for those of you listening that don't know what it is a website. Their tagline is "Life is short, have an affair." And it's basically for married people looking to have an extramarital affair, and that's where they find each other. So how did that come into your world, Sam? And how, you know, talk about that experience for a little bit.
It came into my world through an ad while reading Yahoo News at work one night. I worked the night shift. It's pretty slow at times. The ad popped up on my computer and I was like, oh, that sounds interesting. I downloaded the app and started looking. I was already in this mindset of trying to search outside my marriage for something exciting, or for something more of what I already had with Nia. I started to look back, like, Nia was giving me everything a man would ever want. But for some reason, I was just like trying to maybe look for more of that. That's how it came into my life. Just a stupid ad.
Right. And then we can skip forward to the big, you know, the big reason that the documentary was made. But basically, the website was hacked. There was no security within the website. And basically, everyone's secrets, you know, for the most part that were on the site were revealed, and your name was revealed. And can you explain to people why at that time in your life, that was such a terrible time for that obviously to come out?
You want to answer a little bit?
Sure. I mean, well, we had just a couple weeks prior to the data breach, we had found out we were pregnant, made a video that went viral. And then very shortly after that, I miscarried, and that news kind of also went viral. But for, I mean, it was like people just automatically thought we had faked it all for views, and that the whole pregnancy setup was staged. So we were just kind of at this point in our channel and with our YouTube.
Yeah, we were in the limelight for a second time. We were at one of the biggest moments of our YouTube career. Like, we were making headlines for me announcing the pregnancy, and then. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
we were already in the news when this happened. So the right. timing of it was just kind of insane. And I think a lot of things would have turned out differently had we not been in the limelight.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, and at this point, you guys had quit your other jobs and you were solely doing this vlogging. Is that right?
Yeah, I quit. It was only like a few weeks or a couple weeks prior that I was able to quit my job. When that video went viral, it provided financially. Subscribers came pouring in. Our channel kind of got on the map.
Right.
And it afforded us to quit our job for me.
Right.
To
and so for people that are listening that are not familiar with your vlog, can you explain what a vlog is, and also explain how you guys, like, the genre of what you do? It's a family oriented channel, correct? You talk about your daily life with your kids.
Right.
Yeah.
We got into it from the very beginning to display what it looks like for a family to live for the Lord. We just wanted to show us our church life, our inside struggles, how we raise our children as Christians. That was kind of our mission from the beginning. Yeah. But you can describe what vlogging is.
Yeah, it's, I mean, we basically walked around with a camera like this facing us everywhere we went, just documenting what we were doing everywhere, cooking breakfast, going to the grocery store, going to pick up the kids from school, going on a date, doing my hair, doing my makeup, what's in my purse. I mean, there's just like, you name it. It was like, we're bringing the followers, or, you know, our audience along and showing them.
We're just
what are we up to?
Yeah, just sharing our family with anybody interested in being a part of it.
Yeah.
And it was interesting. A lot of people were like, I don't have a family. And we actually had some grown a lot still grown people, like older people who have never had a family, and they really enjoy living through us vicariously.
Mm-hmm. Right. And do you think that's why you became so popular? People were just really connecting with you guys and believing, you know, this authentic life and wanting to be part of it?
I don't know, honestly, because when we were in that space, there were so many vloggers that had been doing it for so long. Mm-hmm. And the fact that we just kind of came on the scene and found success right away was like mind-boggling. Like, what in the world? And when I look back on it, I really think that the Lord was just from day one, like, we're going to get here and Sam's going to come live in the light, and but we got to get there first. And so it just kind of blows my mind, because we weren't really doing anything differently than other people were, except for being bold about our faith.
Right.
That was new.
Go ahead. Sorry.
I was just saying that was new on the vlogging scene, that we decided right from the get-go we were going to be outspoken Christians, and we had not seen anybody else doing that.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. I got it. So it had the faith component that not a lot of others have, which I think is why, or you tell me if you think it's why, but there was a lot of downfall or criticism when this Ashley Madison hat came out and your name was found on the list, because people were basically like, how could this guy be, you know, living this Christian life, this, you know, this transparent life, and we see all these lies? I mean, do you follow, like, do you understand that that's why so many people, I guess, felt betrayed would be the word, especially because you had followers that really were invested in your family?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. There's a few viewers who have been like shocked, and they're like, wow, I can't believe this, I'm unfollowing. But actually, there's been overwhelming support from our loyal, like, foundational followers, because they are Christians like us, and they understand that we're all completely broken, and none of there's always going to be something else that comes out about us. But yes, to your question, I do understand why I guess there's a intensified amount of hate on us as Christians, because, you know, people love to jump on quote unquote the hypocritical Christian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, but I do want to talk for a second, and I know this is a little uncomfortable, Sam, but like, about the fact that it did take you a while to get to the point where you could be 100% truthful, right? And I think everyone can identify with that, that, you know, a little bit of the truth is going to come out, you admit to it, but you don't want to give the full truth away because you're so scared of the consequences. You're scared of losing your wife, let's say. You're scared of the shame that comes along with it, whatever it is for you. But I think we all can identify with something like that, where, you know, something has come out, you can go down the path of saying, okay, yes, and the admission there, but you don't want to admit the full truth. Can you, like, share how you came to the point where you were like, I have to get it all out, I have to have no skeletons in the closet? Because for people that, you know, watch the documentary, which they will be after this, or if they haven't already, you know, you find out that you do, you know, make an apology and talk to your wife and make an apology to her, and don't necessarily come clean about everything. And I just want to talk to you about how you got to the path where you did, and how that affected you.
Sure. First of all, the documentary does not really cover that very well at all. It kind of just happens all of a sudden. That's why it's important that we wrote our book, because it was a long process and a very spiritual one. But let's see here. Sorry, let me figure out where I want to start.
Okay.
I think she's saying, like, what made you go from the forgiven video to, like, confessing everything?
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. So when my name got identified in the breach, I decided right away I had to lie and downplay it as much as possible. The first lie was that Nia had already known about it, and I got her basically to do that with me, which is a huge regret of mine, that I took her into my lies and led my wife into lying with me. That right there was the start of just like this twisting conviction in me. Then I posted the video. People call us liars and all that, whatever, bunch of new hate. And my insides are being twisted even more. I have a relationship with the Lord at this time, mind you. Like I had put all this in my past 2 years prior. I had not done anything behind his back in terms of unfaithfulness since I deleted the Ashley Madison account. It's kind of interesting. That was the last thing I had done behind her back, and the least of what I had done, actually. And at that point, when Ashley Madison completely failed me, I deleted it. A month later, we found an amazing church, got into a community. A guy plugged himself into my life, started discipling me, helping me shape or helping me walk like Jesus walked. But I was still going to keep these secrets to my grave. Fast forward to the breach. And then my brother sends a text out to the family. He says, "Why are you still lying, bro?" And I'm trying to tell Nia why he's saying that. Lying again in the car. And all those convictions, all those added lies, I'm still weaving lies after how many years I've been since then?
Like close to 2 years. I mean, it,
2 years.
like
I'm still weaving lies, and there's this huge conflict within me. It's like, I can't do this anymore. This is getting stupid. I did not mean to be lying after all this time. So I'd hop on the phone with my pastor, and I feel like God gave him this line to just live in truth, brother. And it hit me so hard, like hit every part of me. And no one had ever told me that before. Live in truth, that there is another way than lying. There, it's possible. For the first time, I felt it was possible to tell Nia everything. I never ever thought once before that point that it was even possible for me to tell Nia, because I knew it was going to shatter her. And so I get off the phone with him, and yeah, the rest I get in the car and I just start telling her everything. I was done with lying.
And were you feeling like this was what you needed to do, even if it made her walk away from you? I mean, I can imagine that must have been really scary, thinking she could divorce you after this. And also, you guys have a public persona together. You have a brand together. I mean, it could really, you choosing to be honest and live in truth could literally shatter everything you've built up into that moment.
Right, yeah. I had no idea what was going to happen on the other side. And I describe it in the book as a trust fall, like those things we did at church camp. It's like all I could trust was that God was going to be there to catch me. I had no idea what was going to happen, but I had to stop thinking about the future because it was possibly extremely ugly. So like for the first time in my life, I had to live at 100% in the moment. And that was part of that confession that, like, never in my life have I felt so like in the moment. I couldn't think about the past, the future. But yeah, it was terrifying because I had no idea what was going to happen next.
What you're saying reminds me of that quote I feel like I've read so many times in life. I'm going to get it wrong, but something about how God tells you to take a step and take a step. And you're like, but there's a cliff. And he's like, take a step. And you know you're going to fall off and you think you're going to die. And then you fly or something. So I think it reminds me of that.
Yeah.
So how close were you guys to getting a divorce after this?
For a little while there, it was pretty close. I mean, I was determined for a little bit. I mean, I told my in-laws like, bye, it's been nice knowing you, basically left our family group chat. And I mean, yeah, I mean, he was no longer staying at the house with us. He was staying with our pastors, Bo, who's on the documentary too. Yeah, I mean, I don't know how close it was, never like the, you know, courts or anything like that involved. Things changed before we got to that point, but
It got really ugly because as I removed some of the bigger confessions to her in Seattle, when we got home, other things started coming up, like other smaller confessions and details that I had forgotten about, basically. And I had to get it all out. Nia needed to know everything. And the confessions were like painfully drip fed to Nia.
yeah, it was horrible.
And so
Right.
part of that was like, I'm definitely getting divorced. There's no way I can do this for the rest of my life. So the process was so ugly and painful for her.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Right. And that's what I was going to ask you, actually. Listening to this, I feel like people might say, but at that point, wasn't it selfish? Because did she need to hear all those details just because you needed to feel clean because you were the one that was broken, so to speak, or you're the one that lied? So like Nia, how hard was it for you to make those steps to start saying, okay, I want to forgive or I can forgive?
It was really hard. I mean, like you said, the confessions kind of kept coming, and it's not just that he needed to tell them to me. I was almost like demanding them. Like, if you can't tell me everything, well, we're done for today. Like, we'll just go our separate ways for today, you know? And then we'd have these moments back in counseling where we would just be talking about things. But I mean, it was really, really hard. The first couple of sessions we went to counseling were kind of just for me to like, I just kind of wanted him to air all his dirty laundry out to our pastors and watch how it was going to go down. Like, it was like, I want to bash him to them, basically.
Right.
And I mean,
and I will say, I definitely fought not to give her more details. It was definitely not selfish of me to give her the details. I fought hard. I said, God, you have to stop doing this. We're resurrecting the dead. This is long behind me. The details don't matter. You get the point. You get where I was. But she and the council, our pastors, insisted that Nia needed to know everything, so she knew what she had to forgive.
Yeah, I still kind of stand by that. Like, we're really heavily involved in this kind of ministry, like with people today. And it's like a double-sided coin. There are a lot of people who will say, don't give any details at all. And then there's some who say, if you're going to know, if you're going to forgive, you, what are you forgiving even? And so I kind of fell on that very heavily on that side of the spectrum. But getting to the point where I had made up my mind to forgive him, it was so hard because, and we talk about this in the book, I came home from a girl's night out, and I just knew the Lord had told me, you know, I knew I was going to forgive him. I was so excited, so ready to tell him. And I go into the room where he was. He had been playing with our kids in the playroom, and he literally went through like another hour of confessions, like just smaller ones. It was like, you know, not physical things. It was more like emotional or like hung out here behind your back, whatever. I don't know, but just little things. And so I was like, well, I guess I'm not. I left the house for the evening. I stayed with a friend, and it just, you know, the process would start over every single time. Like, okay, well now what? Not, you know, like, am I going to stay? I don't think I can do this anymore. And it took a lot of like studying the Bible, really learning like what is the right thing to do. What is like the godly thing to do in this position? And we talk about this in the book, but you kind of think like the Bible kind of, we think the Bible says, well, if they are adulterous, then you have the right to leave. And like, that's kind of something I feel like as someone who was raised like in the church and, you know, around, you know, the Bible, that it's just kind of a black and white thing. And it's really not. There's so much more to what the Bible says about divorce than what we think we know. Mm-hmm. And so I just kind of went on a mission to find it all out before I could make any decisions. And
right.
Yeah.
Sorry, so I do want to ask you, cause I feel like, you know, I would be remiss if I didn't ask, because I've seen it also on your comments. You know, how do you combat the criticism that you guys are using faith to be an enabler, Nia, and also to be an adulterer, Sam? You know, I want to hear from you guys what your answers would be to those people criticizing you in that way.
Basically, they're saying our faith is a cop out. I've never said once that adultery is okay because of my Christianity. Mm-hmm. But what I have to say to that, I guess, is they're missing the repentance that I had. There, which is a turning away from your sin and a complete turnaround. Mm-hmm. They're missing that point. When that happens in somebody's life, do you really just get rid of them? Even aside from the Bible, which I can't separate myself from the Word of God, but sure, the world does. But like, even in the world, do people just throw people to the curb if they're completely sorry for what they did? And they've
And that's a good point, because I think that what we're talking about is second chances and the power of second chances. And there are people that don't believe in them. There are people that will hold something against you. And in my opinion, it's because of what you've triggered in them. I mean, that's what I've found. If they cannot forgive you, that's something that they are dealing with, right? It's not any longer on you. But if you've done the work and you have come through on the other side, why wouldn't someone be able to start over and be given a second chance? And that's, I think, why I'm a little bit, I don't know if I want to use the word shocked about reading the comments on your pages, but I'm just a little more skeptical that these people have never been through something that they don't deserve to be given a second chance about. If what you're saying is true. And I think maybe the skepticism also, though, is that you are a man of faith, you are a woman of faith, and these things still happened. How do you know that it will change? Because you didn't see signs before Nia, right? That he might be cheating or lying, forget the cheating, just lying in general, right? So I guess that to me is why people are having a hard time coming to the other side with you guys. Not everybody, but those people that are criticizing.
Yeah, those are the people also, they don't know our full story. And right. they know a little snippet of what was shared in the documentary, but oh, I totally saw signs. I mean, so many signs, so many conversations that I definitely saw signs. We had a lot of boundaries in place when we first got married that we just, like we mentioned earlier, we kind of compromised on them as time went on. You know, you get comfortable, you get busy, kids, blah, blah, blah. But I definitely saw signs and convinced myself that, you know, and he convinced me too, you know, like, oh, this is nothing. I'm just imagining. And that gets touched on in the documentary too by Christy in the second episode. And I think a lot of wives, more than maybe are willing to admit to it, have those feelings. They sense that there's something off with their husband. They sense there's something off in their marriage, and they convince themselves before they even take it to their husband that they're crazy or this is not, I'm imagining things. And you know,
or they don't want to know.
Yeah, it's scary for them to know. Yeah,
and one thing that makes me so sad when I think about primarily the women, the female response in the hate section, you know, of our comments. I think that maybe this is hitting a nerve for them, because some of them probably still really loved their husband, just like I did, and they chose to leave. And maybe we're causing them to think, wait a minute, could we have made that work? He was also very sorry. And it really does break my heart, because I can sympathize and empathize with them, because just because someone cheats on you, I didn't cheat. I loved him very much. And just because he broke my heart and he betrayed me, doesn't mean I stopped loving this man that I've known and loved since I was 15 years old. You can't just throw right. love away. I didn't break the marriage. Like, right. you know, if someone's going to be questioned on who loves the other, it would be him, not me. But I'm getting a lot of that. Like, how could you not just leave? And I'm like, how could you just up and leave? Like,
that was part of the very unfair aspect of me confessing to her. That I deserved to be like pushed aside and no longer deserving of her trust and her support and her love that I also needed in my life. But she didn't deserve that. And that's why hardcore I went after her. I chased her again and made sure she knew that I loved her and my love for her is as available as she needs it. Communication was wide open. I think that's really important for her to know that she's still safe, as communication, deep conversations, meeting with other couples, make sure I'm meeting with other men. And she knows my relationship with the Lord is slipping, because like other things start to slip before I go into adultery. Like there's science behind like how men end up relapsing. There's a process to it. It's not like sudden. Mm-hmm. Of course it can be, but just like an alcoholic or, you know, somebody addicted to drugs, yeah. It's a process. It's not like she won't be able to identify those again. She calls right. her shoe. Me out on him if she sees any sort of sign of me slipping. Why are you eating unhealthy again? Like,
yeah, it's interesting you say that because the message that I really got out of the docuseries and in your book too is, it wasn't a story of Ashley Madison, right, and the adultery, although it was in the hack, but it was really a story of like how relationships can be changed if you communicate with your significant other. When that is lacking and when people go in different directions, all sorts of problems can happen. But if you communicate, you can get that back. And what happened in the Ashley Madison situation is so many people had a much worse experience because they lost their relationships. Some of them lost their jobs. Some people killed themselves. I mean, it was terrible what happened. So I think your story is obviously a success story. I know you chose to do this documentary when you chose not to be part of another one. I want to know what made you do it. I know you really became close with some of the bookers, the producers. Do you feel after having seen the documentary that you were portrayed correctly? And what other things we don't know that we didn't see that you feel was missing from it?
I've said like from the very first, just from the very beginning, I do think they showed our story accurately, but it's missing so much context. And there's one detail that they twisted. I mean, there might be more than one, but there's one very prominent detail
about, that was important to me. You're talking about my part.
Yeah. And it was a little twisted. I'm just kind of covering like how we looked at it. And it's not like we walked away from it feeling like blindsided by the producers or whatever. It was just, you know, we had some questions. Sam actually hopped on a phone call with the director.
Yeah.
And touched on some of that, but
he actually thought it was perfectly reasonable and okay what he did.
And what was that? Well, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, since he's a non-Christian, I kind of understood where he's coming from. He said basically, at the beginning where my story, the breach happens, I'm sorry, where our YouTube story happens, mm-hmm. begins with the frozen lip sync. They made it look like my adultery thoughts went away after YouTube came on the scene.
I've thought that, yeah, as a watcher. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which was false. And I totally see how people could see I traded one vice for another. And to be completely honest, the validation aspect that I still struggle with today from other people, yes, that was given to me through the channel, of course. But my life changed. It took a 360 4 months prior. And he left all that out, that a man came into my life and started discipling me and pouring into me and helping me walk like Jesus. We started a new church where a community came around us and just made us feel like we belonged, mm-hmm. for like the first time of our marriage.
Yeah.
We were not isolated and our lives completely turned around. And then YouTube came on the scene.
Hmm. Yeah. So that was a pretty big twist in the story that a lot of people it's unfortunate because people, it makes it harder for them to see the redemption story because they're like, oh, he just traded one thing for the next. And it's just literally not true. It's not how the story happened.
But I see where he's coming from, right? Where I traded the validation I was searching for in adultery with YouTube. Mm. That's how he
saw it. You mean the validation of YouTube and people watching you and commenting.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So I see what he's saying.
So I think a lot of people would also want to know though, you know, how it would have worked out if the hack had never happened. Because you're saying it happened, you know, God came into your life, the Lord came into your life before this anyways. But for people not understanding this, I just do want to touch on the topic of if the breach had never happened, would you have, excuse me, ever come clean? Or would you have stopped completely, never come clean? Would you have continued to cheat? What do you think would have happened in your life?
Well, the Bible's clear that, gosh, I wish I had that Bible verse. What's that Bible verse?
What's done in darkness will be brought to light.
It's clear that the truth will be brought to light in the Bible one way or another on this earth or in heaven. And I would be accountable for it either way. But I can't say. All I know is God used it to set me free. And he started it very tenderly and gently with me. He exposed the least of what I had done. And he said, I don't want you to be living in slavery, Sam. I don't want this for you. This is the sanctification process. Which is becoming more like Jesus as we grow in our faith. And he said, I'm going to do this part for you because you can't do it, obviously, mm-hmm. But you're going to have to take it the rest of the way. So I give God the complete credit for all of it. I have no idea what would happen if the breach didn't happen. It's kind of all I know is he did it. We're here. And he probably would have done it another way.
Right. Yeah. You're saying it would have been found out one way or the other, because it does sound like there was a few times when people kept pushing you to have that truth set you free, so to speak, but whether it's your brother, whether it's the hack, you know, it was coming out one way or the other is your point.
Basically. Yes. Yeah. That's my point.
Okay. So I want to talk about the book because, you know, again, people have, you know, can watch the story, your story, plus the whole story of Ashley Madison in the background on the docuseries, but you have written a book, Sam and Nia, Live in Truth. How long have you guys been working on that?
Forever. Man, I mean,
2 years.
Like officially full time, 2 years. But I mean, we really, really started like
thinking about it
and doing little bits and pieces of it way back when we first like started healing and realizing our marriage was going to survive and all that. So it's been a long time coming.
And it's definitely more faith based. You talk a lot about your faith, a lot about how that helped you. Can you just describe succinctly like what faith means to you and people who don't get it? Explain why that is an important thing that's helped you in your relationship together.
Well, for starters, like a reviewer had said, you don't have to be a believer to read this book. It is faith-based, but our full story is there and you get a better understanding of where we're coming from. But why our faith is important, because we all have to have a foundation. Like if somebody was to jump into your heart and go down to the very bottom, and like, where would they end up? Where would the bottom be? Like, we should all be asking ourselves that. If somebody jumped into my heart and went through all the crevices and got to the very bottom, they would end up in the Word of God. And so that is our foundation. And you have to have that. Like, if you don't have something that you're living on top of, then you're built on sand and you can be easily pushed over and wrecked.
Mm-hmm.
And so since the Bible is so solid and proven time and time again of changing hearts, and you know, just the physical evidence, it's just so true. But if you're standing on that, you won't be knocked down easily.
I think for me too, like just speaking to anyone out there who kind of thinks this is just like, oh, whatever, you know, like you can find yourself so much in the Word of God, and you know, we should always be looking for Him first when we read. But when I, you know, one of the first things I went to when this happened was, can you guess it? David and Bathsheba. I mean, you can find your circumstance and how God healed it and healed the person and forgave the person and really did a huge work in their life anywhere in the Bible. I mean, there's everything imaginable. There's war, there's murder, there's adultery, there's child loss. I mean, every single horrible thing we go through in our lives as humans, you can find an answer for it there. And I mean, how could you look, how could you not look to that knowing that, you know, how could I ignore that just because my husband, you know, cheated on me or whatever, you know, I want other people to know, like, there is hope. Like it doesn't have to, things don't have to end tragically. Or
I think the other thing is
ahead. I'm getting tongue tied anyway.
Why our faith is so important is because before, We said we loved the Lord, but really, in reality, we were making each other God. We had each other in the position that God should have been in. And we saw when our marriage was shattered, Nia kind of lost herself.
Mm-hmm.
And it brought her back to the Word of God and me as well. Like, it broke me. But the only way we were able to heal was because we had something stronger than the other person to help us get there.
Yeah. And I think that's another thing the documentary... I'm sorry. Are we talking? We're just talking over you.
Go ahead.
I think that's another thing that's just so left out of the documentary. It kind of looks like he cheated and bam, I forgave him. And really what happened was he cheated. I wanted to divorce him. He went on this whole individual path to finding his identity in the Lord. And I went on my own separate journey and finding my identity in the Lord.
And we met back up at the Lord.
Yes. And our marriage was honestly, people, like, I know it just dumbfounds people, but like, I finally had the real Sam in front of me. And that's like, I wouldn't trade that for anything. Some other woman would have gotten the greater parts of him. And I'm just glad it was me. And I think also, yeah, like, sure, our marriage was better than it had ever been. And despite the hard stuff and the sad things, like, everything about marriage was better. Like communication, date nights, sex, parenting, romance, gazing at each other. I mean, everything was better than it had been prior because we were being our true authentic selves with each other.
So it was better after the fact. How is it now, today, after the documentary, years later from when this stuff actually happened?
Well, we just had sex this morning.
Sam, you're so good.
Just say it. Wonderful.
Oh, wow. Yeah. It's so great. You You're embarrassing me.
Oh, sorry.
Love that. Oh, that's so cute. All right. Well, so then you guys, I have a question. So you, I want you to give a little advice for people who are looking to preserve a marriage. People that are maybe in a situation similar to yours. They don't know whether to hold on, try, work on it. What would you say you learned from this experience? What would you say made it work? Like, and for, sorry, but don't take no offense on this. Besides the version of finding God and finding faith, a tangible thing that people can take away to help themselves forgive, move forward, and preserve a marriage that they want to make work.
Oof.
I would just say, make sure you're not doing it alone, because we can fall for lots of lies in our feelings. Mm-hmm. And if we have somebody sitting next to us and alongside of us who are pointing out the blind spots, like that can make a world of a difference. Mm-hmm. Like, don't do it alone. You can't do any, you can't do life at all alone.
Yeah. And I would say marriage counseling all the way. We had intense, very long counseling sessions for over a year. I mean, we did bi-weekly at first. So we were sitting in front of professional and pastoral counseling for hours on end. Then it went to once a week and then twice a month and then once a month. I mean, I look back on that. I'm like, I don't know how we made it through some of those arguments, is just because we were sitting across from people helping us like work through the weeds. And I'm so, so thankful. Like, community counseling is two huge things that people even outside of the faith can do.
Something I read in your book that seemed to stand out to me is that you guys have a lot of, how would I call it, rules, boundaries now that you follow to keep yourselves in check. And especially in how you interact with the opposite sex. Can you talk about that a little bit and how that's kept you in line?
Yeah, sure. That's really important, because I do have a deep struggle with being attracted to other women that aren't my wife. I still struggle with lust. That didn't just go away. So it was important for us to set boundaries. And like, for example, there's a chapter in the book where a woman invites me to her house alone during our healing journey. And I'm sitting in my car outside of her house because it broke down and she knew who we were, but she invited me to her house to go in alone. But we had boundaries in place. Mm-hmm. That one was kind of obvious. Like, the boundary was don't talk privately with another woman if she's not there. Mm. I'm trying to deal with that small thing, not even worrying about going inside with her, because I'm worried about this other small boundary. And so I guess, like, if you have these boundaries, you don't even get to the point where emotions can even be developed. Mm-hmm. And we're always kind of adjusting our boundaries, like no drinking more than 2 glasses of wine out if we're with somebody, another couple, because I tend to get stupid.
Yeah, don't we all? But yeah, and we're talking about it too. It's not something that we like set these boundaries 10 years ago. And we're just like, you know, they ebb and flow with us too. You know, we had some really cool things happen recently and like it's cause to celebrate. And it was kind of like a little bit of a conversation, like, we're going to drink while we're out tonight. And like, yeah, let's get a couple, you know, and just trying to be very careful about where we're at, where we're heading, what is our motive behind what we're doing, you know, when it comes to, you know, going having a drink with dinner or whatever. But,
and it's crazy what happens when you set these boundaries in place. For example, like early on, it was like, don't bring your phone into the restroom, because pornography was always a temptation. But that is no longer a temptation for me at all. I remember the point I told you, like, I don't see God ever redeeming me from pornography. It'll always be a struggle. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah, I remember that.
And I've been completely recovered from that. Like, that is not a temptation for me anymore. So if you continue not to cross these boundaries, it's almost like you're developing a new habit. Mm-hmm. And like your brain, your physical brain actually does shift into different routines, and you stop thinking about certain things. And
it's really interesting how you guys put it, because my follow-up question was, is that setting yourself up for failure? Cause those things are going to be hard. But, you know, I think that's really honest. Just because you marry somebody or you're dating somebody, it doesn't mean that it takes away your feelings for being attracted to other people. The thing that can make you falter is the temptation. I mean, there is an us, right, of you guys, but that doesn't have anything to do with anyone else's behavior. If the woman's, flirting with you, if there's a guy near you, a beautiful woman flirting with you, telling you, oh, forget your husband, just, you know, no one has to know. These things happen to people all the time. So like for anyone to say that they haven't been tempted or they haven't had feelings for someone of the opposite sex would be lying. And that would be ridiculous. So I think a lot of people act like they don't fall in that category, but I don't really know anyone that doesn't fall into that category at some point in their life. And it is how you handle it. And you guys have set more verbal boundaries maybe than some other people, but I'm understanding why that makes sense. And it probably would be helpful in a lot of people's relationships. I think so many people get tripped up on social media. It is a place where I think relationships falter all the time because there's so much smoke and mirrors and people are tempted by people that don't even really exist. That's not what their lives look like. That's not what they physically look like. And you're too busy scrolling and seeing these people and you're like, oh, wow, look at this woman. Look at this man. Look at how amazing they look. I'd like to be with them. No, yeah. You wouldn't. The grass is not greener on that side. That person is probably miserable and sucks. You know, like you're just focused on what you're doing, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah. But we set a boundary before this documentary came out. One of them was, I won't check any messages without her presence. And it's just a simple thing to be like, if a woman was to reach out to me, like she would see it right away and delete it. And there won't be any temptation. So yeah, before you get to that point where someone can flirt with you or make you feel good, or allow them to make you feel good about yourself, you got to set boundaries before you even get to that point. And that's what we strive to do.
Yeah. Right. And, you know, I've actually heard of celebrities that do it. Ice-T and his wife, his wife's name? Coco. They have the same, they share a cell phone. Obviously, that makes sense. So you guys aren't the first people to do it. I think it's commendable. Are you guys angry that Ashley, or how do you feel about Ashley, the fact that Ashley Madison is still up and running and is doing better since the documentary came out, has continued to do better? I read an article this morning. They're getting 365,000 new followers, subscribers, whatever, people on the site a month. That's crazy to me. What are your thoughts on that?
That's crazy. I think they said 60 million men are on there now. Or 60 million people, but probably mostly men again. It just shows that there's a problem. And it's interesting how we're kind of getting the brunt of 30 million men being exposed. It's like they're just like targeting us, but did they forget like 30 million other men were in it?
Right. Well, yeah, but they were fucked. Excuse my language. A lot of people lost their relationships. The reason why you're interesting is because you made it through. So again, like I just want to basically harp on that for 1 second. What would you guys say, you know, is the most misunderstood thing about how you guys were represented and how you want to be perceived now? And it doesn't have to be just from the documentary, but like in the whole journey of what's happened, because, you know, you have fans that have followed you on your blog that you, you know, may have different thoughts about you now or before.
I think to keep it short and sweet, I believe that people can change and that redemption is an option. Forgiveness is an option. Yeah,
I like that answer. I read that there was a class action lawsuit. It was settled in 2017 for like $11.2 million, and 37 million users were part of that class action lawsuit. Were you guys part of that?
No, I tried to sue them separately, actually, because that took a little more.
How did that go?
A little more beating than everybody else, I think. It was just a friend of mine who mentioned it, who is also a YouTuber. I was like, yeah, let's just go for it. It was super casual litigation. I thought, why not? But the lawyers end up just dropping it. But I do want to answer your previous question.
Sure, please do.
You said, how would I want people to perceive me now? I think a lot of people are perceiving me as narcissistic, and I'm hearing that quite a bit. And I see where they're coming from. I would be the first person to admit that I struggle with narcissism, and I have my entire life. It's kind of almost a family like curse. But yeah, I see where they're coming from. But if I could change how people perceive me, it would be, I just would pray that when they see me, they would think of Jesus.
I love that. Okay. I love the fact that you guys have this message about second chances, about faith. Tell me what you're doing now with your family vlog. What's your viewership now for people that are listening?
We got a little increase during this documentary, but our channel's been suffering for several years. It just kind of tanked, I think, for multiple reasons. And we touch on that in the book. I have a moment where I literally break down and cry because of our channel just suddenly stopped providing for our family. Brand deals dried up, views dried up. But it, I mean, it's doing all right. It's just, I mean, we're not making a ton of money. We don't, brand deals aren't coming in for sure. Nobody wants to be associated with us right now, and they haven't been for a while.
Yeah, I think, but what we're doing is still the same thing we've always done. We still just want to share what it looks like to live for the Lord. And it's taken a little bit of a shift. It shifted a little bit because so much of it is a little more marriage focused. And before it was kind of like young parenting, you know, young parents with young children. And
I think that's why now.
Yeah, but, you know, like in our personal lives, which we share in our channel too, we are heavily, heavily involved in ministry that deals with betrayal in marriages. And I mean, it's such a huge part of our lives. We sit across multiple times a week, sit across from women and men who are working towards becoming free from their own addictions or working to heal what was broken in their marriages, encouraging women, you know, like I've got, you know, multiple little text threads and I, you know, throughout the week, it's like, let's see, check in on this person and check in on this person. And how can we encourage our husbands today? You know, because a lot of people really do want their marriages to work. It's not, it's a little more common than I think others realize that people aren't just ready to throw their families away. And that's something that's really personal to us that we are, you know, doing today as well.
Yeah, a lot of people are, did you guys get back together because of the channel? We've gotten that a couple of times, like stay because of their following. Well, we did have a good following, but they're failing to like, recognize that we also had children involved and we also had a home involved and we also had a love between us still involved. So like to their point, yes, we absolutely considered everything we had built to that point when deciding to keep our family together. But for some reason, they like to keep out the fact that, you know, we still loved each other and we had children involved. So the children were, you know, way more worth than our channel.
I can appreciate that. So what do you guys think you see in your future for money making? You know, if do you think the channel will end up, will you end it? Will you start a new channel that you, I mean, it sounds to me like you guys would do a really good job having a channel that's based on betrayal and saving marriages and some sort of counseling or advice on that level. Like, where do you see your future going in terms of businesses and how to, you know, make money?
I think you just prophesied over us. We'll just do just that. Thank you.
Oh, so funny. No, that, we have had those conversations though, like exactly what you just said is kind of a possibility. So we'll see what
we have a cabin rental. We may be doing more real estate investing. That's our primary income now, actually. We have a vacation rental cabin and that's been providing for us.
Well, I mean, I do think that you guys have so much experience in marriage counseling, in dealing with people in crisis, in some sort of, you know, scandal within their marriage, things about forgiveness, things about coming clean, things about second chances. So I think you guys would do very well as someone who's counseling people who are going through it with the end goal to be that they're hoping they can keep it together. Some people just want to they're so angry and they just want to make their partner's lives miserable. But I think for those people that really, and I don't think you have to be into faith. I don't think that's a faith conversation. It's really about where you see, you know, your future going. And if you can keep that us together. So your audience, you know, I don't want you to pigeonhole it just into the faith community, because I know that that topic you know, so many people struggle with it, unfortunately, you know, What else did I miss? Is there anything else you guys want to talk about? Anything you guys are doing in the near future you want to talk about?
I don't know. We're offering on our website, it's just a little, if a couple wants to talk to us, we're offering to talk to another couple face to face for $150. And if they just want to talk to Nia for like $60, if they want to connect with us and see what we did to get through the other side.
Yeah.
That's something we just put up.
Just kind of like coaching, you know, I wouldn't say coaching, counseling because we still, you know, we whatever, but just
coaching
just,
and encouragement,
just kind of coaching and encouraging along the way, because that's the only thing that's
some people
that's
are
kind
so
of what
isolated.
Gets you from point A to point B sometimes is just hearing it's okay to forgive your husband. Some women literally just need to hear those words and they can move forward a little bit.
Yeah. And I see what you were saying before about you not coaching or counseling. The thing is that obviously you guys don't have doctorates. You haven't been to school for it, but I will say you've been through it. So that to me is a lot of, it's the experience you need, because some person can read a book for 4 years and go to school to be a marriage counselor. But if they haven't been through what you guys have been through, they can't talk on those feelings and talk about what it's like to get through it and how you get through it besides what they've read in a textbook. So I can appreciate that you guys would, in my opinion, I would think you're just as good, if not better, than finding somebody who has a degree in marital counseling. So I don't want you guys to think that you need to go to school for it.
That's really sweet. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Of course. Well, again, I watched the docuseries. Everyone should watch the docuseries. I think it's great. I personally think you guys are portrayed in a way that people are rooting for you. I was rooting for you. I'm so happy that I got to meet you. I think everyone that wants to hear more on this story should get your book. Where can they find your book?
It's on Amazon. We have the ebook.
Okay.
Your paper cover and a hardback.
Yes, Amazon. We just got our official copy without the proof stripe yesterday. Was it yesterday?
Amazing. It is worth the read. I read it yesterday, you guys. I thought it was fantastic. I have my own issues with my faith because of things I've been through in my life, and I don't know where I'm at with God. So, but my whole point is it didn't matter. I loved your book. I love you guys. I wish you the best. If anything ever happens and you guys are questioning each other, reach out to friends, reach out to me, because I want you guys to succeed. I think you guys are great.
Oh, thanks you so much.
Good luck to you.
Thank you so much for listening to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. Please be sure to subscribe to the show and give us a 5-star rating and review. You can support the show by joining our Patreon at patreon.com/misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel. Do you have ideas for the show or want to reach out? Email us at info@misunderstoodpodcast@gmail.com. That's spelled MISS understood. Thank you so much, and I'll see you next time.